This podcast is a production of Bridges Church. Please visit us at www.bridgeschurch.net.
Well, good morning. My name is Jacob Harden. I'm the family pastor here at Bridges Church. Patrick and Stacey got to get away this week to celebrate their 35th wedding anniversary, which is really exciting. Yeah. I know he loves this. I didn't tell him I was going to do this. I'm really excited to get to be up here with you guys today. I'm excited for them to have gotten away this week and had some time off. And today we're going to jump back into our series, Canaan, part 7. We've started this series a while back. We've been out of it for a couple of weeks. We had some cool things going on the last 2 weeks. So we jumped out. We're going to jump back into Genesis chapter 16 today, if you want to go ahead and turn there in your Bibles. We have a little bit of time, but just to give you a little bit of a refresher, since it has been a few weeks. Throughout the series, we've been looking at the life of Abram. We've been looking at the calling that God placed on his life back in chapter 12, which we're going to actually cover here in a little bit. We've been talking about how God promised Abram descendants. Abram was 75 at the time of this call, but God promised him children. We talked about last time we were in the series about how God told Abram that he'd have descendants as numerous as the number of stars in the sky. And that's kind of where we're going to pick up here today. But before we get to chapter 16, I want to give you a little bit of a disclaimer. I had a professor in college, and I didn't know at the time how I've referred to her so many times up here on stage. I didn't know at the time that she would say so many things that stuck with me so much. But she said, one of the things she said was that the Bible, in particular the Old Testament, is rated R. And I didn't believe her in the moment, but the more and more you read the Bible, especially the Old Testament, the more you're going to find that out. And I'm not suggesting that this chapter, Genesis chapter 16, is rated R, but it's certainly going to make you feel a little uncomfortable. There's some things in it that aren't going to be so fun, so easy, and I think that's true anytime the protagonist in the story ends up making choices and doing things that aren't wise, right? They get their misguided decisions, and it's not easy to read, and we see that not just here with Abram today, but we see this through other protagonists that we love and we learn about in Sunday school, and we sing songs about sometimes. Noah, David, go back to the beginning in Adam and Eve, right? These people that we sort of hold in this high esteem regularly mess up, regularly fall short of the glory of God. But at the end of the day, another theme that we're going to find through this story here, and one person in particular, is the redemption story that God tells throughout all of it. God often redeems these mistakes that people make. He shines through that in every single story that we're going to read, and especially the one today, again, through one particular person. So do me a favor today and lean into that uncomfortable feeling. Lean into it. I think it's going to be healthy to understand how the ways that Abram and Sarah are going to mess up in this story are going to be relatable in some way, shape, or form to the faults that we have in our own lives. So lean into that for me today. But let's go ahead and start. We're going to jump into chapter 16. We're going to read the whole thing all the way through. And then we're going to go back through verse by verse, all right? So the whole chapter 16, verses 1 through 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be done to you. I gave my servant to your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But when Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power, do to her as you please," then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, in the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress, Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man,
his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. So she called out the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing," for she said, "Truly here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore, the well was called Beer Laharoi, and it lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar was born Ishmael. So there's two parts to the story, and we're going to start here in the beginning. But before we get into this first part of the story, I think there's some context that we need. We've already covered in the series, but I think it's good to go back and just refresh on. So if we can go back to the very first verses we read in the series of Canaan, chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Here it says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go to your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I'll bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you, all the families of earth shall be blessed.'" So when we covered this, Patrick talked about living by faith and how there's this big leap of faith that Abram had to take. But there's also this blessing at the same time, right? There's this blessing of this promise of children, of descendants. And I think for Abram and Sarah to do this big, big thing, right, to follow God and this big, big calling that he had on their lives, one of the reasons why they were able to do such a thing was because of this clinging on to this thing of this blessing, this promise, this hope that they had of having children. So 10 years before what we just read in chapter 16, God promises them a child. If you fast forward just a little bit to verse 7 in the same chapter, it says, "Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your offspring I will give this land.' So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him." So if you put yourself in Abram and Sarai's shoes here for a moment, again, 10 years down the road, this is a long time. But in this moment in time, God told them, "You're going to have children." And they're clinging to this. And a 75-year-old man and a 65-year-old woman shouldn't be able to have kids, right? They know this. They'd realize it's a difficult thing. But again, we're going to go back to 10 years later, this is a long, long, long time from now. And as we get into chapter 15, what we read this last time, I think we start to understand, and I think it's more plausible to us, and we can feel for Abram a little bit when he starts to make some mistakes. He starts in the very first few verses of chapter 15, and he has his own idea of what this might look like. Again, we're waiting 10 years, and he says, "You know what? Maybe I misunderstood God. Maybe God isn't going to do what he said he was going to do. Maybe I have to do something on my own to make this thing that God said happen." So maybe he didn't actually mean that I was gonna have my own kids. Maybe this other person who isn't related to me, who isn't my offspring, is gonna be the heir to all these things that God has given me, to this land he's taken me to this nation he's building through me, from me. Maybe this other person is supposed to be it. And God says, "Well, that's not what I said. Hang on." And so God responds in verses 4 through 6 here, and he says, "And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, 'This man shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir.' And he brought him outside and said, 'Look toward heaven and number the stars, if you're able to number them.' And he said to him, 'So shall your offspring be.' And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness." Patrick talked about a few weeks ago when we read this, that you can't just walk outside in your backyard, look up at the sky, and see what Abram saw, right? We have this thing called light pollution. But if you were able to go to a place where light pollution didn't exist, you would see that there are stars more than you could possibly count, as far as you could possibly see. And God told Abram, "That is what I'm talking about. These are going to be your descendants. This plan that you've made isn't my plan. This idea you came up with isn't my plan. I've got you. Trust me. Have faith." Right? So now, with that, let's jump back into these first two verses in chapter 16. And we're going to see a parallel here, I think, between Abram and the way that Sarai is responding here in these first two verses. So in Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 2, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, 'Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. it may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So again, a lot of similarities between what Abram's plan and Sarai's plan here. And I think there's two big things here we can take away from this logic that they both came up with, but we're going to focus in on Sarai today. But this logic that she has that, you know, God, yes, I trust you, I believe you, you're going to give us a kid. I just don't know that the way you said you were going to give us a kid is actually the way you're going to give us a kid, right? I don't know that I have that kind of faith. I've lost that kind of faith. So there she does two things. The first thing she does here, and I think both of these things are very relatable to us and our walks with Jesus. I think we've all been in these places and done these things. It just has looked a little bit different. But the first thing she does is she's impatient, right? She can't wait. She says, I've been waiting for 10 years, which, to be fair, is a long time. I'm not saying, but she still is impatient. She gets impatient. 10 years down the road, she says, something else has to happen, right? My 4-year-old son, Jonah, has been talking about and so excited about turning 5 for 9 months. He won't turn 5 till September. He's still got a little ways to go. But he's been so excited about it. And he has his birthday planned out. He has known what he's wanted for his birthday since his birthday party last year. He has known what he wanted his birthday party to look like for several months now. It's going to be a National Treasure 2 birthday party, by the way. Not National Treasure 1, because that would be, he's not had that one yet, but he wants to skip to number 2. And the kicker is he wants his cousins and his friends to role play the opening scene of the movie, which, if you're not familiar with the film, depicts the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I don't know why he's so enthralled with this, but he wants to reenact this thing. He's impatient. Since the day he turned 4, he's wanted to turn 5. And I assume the day he turns 5, he'll be looking forward to turning 6, right? Because there's always something better, and every single one of us can relate to this thing, right? This thing, idea of impatience. We're always looking for the next thing, and the society that we live in is a fast-paced society. Things change all the time. New iPhones come out every September. New trends on social media occur every week. Things are always changing, and people always want to change. And it's understandable, although misguided, to understand why we may get to this point of, you know, God, you said you're going to do this thing. I haven't seen it happen yet, so I'm just going to do it on my own. And I don't know if it's going to fall into your plan or the way that you had timed this thing out, but I'm just going to do it myself. I can understand why we get there, but it's misguided, right? Just as it was misguided for Sarai to think this thousands and thousands of years ago. The second mistake that she makes here, and the second thing that I think we all can relate to on some level, is she put God in a box, right? She puts God in a box. She says, God, I still think what you said is going to happen is going to happen, but I'm not sure that I have faith that an 85-year-old man and a 75-year-old woman can have a kid. It's not happened yet. Maybe it's just because you can't do it. Maybe it's because you aren't actually able to make that thing happen. Maybe you need us to step in because we're pretty smart people and we know what we're doing, and maybe we have a good idea of how to help you accomplish this goal that you have. So I'm going to step in and help you, right? But she put God in a box and said, God's not able to do this thing. And so she made up her own plan, right? And again, we do this all the time. I suspect every single one of you has had something in your life that's gone on for a long time. The thing has weighed you down. This thing has been a heavy, heavy thing in your life. You've prayed about it. You've had other people around you praying for this thing. You've had little glimpses of hope that haven't turned out the way that you hoped. And you think, you know what? Why should I keep holding this thing up and holding onto this thing? I'm losing hope. I don't think God can take care of this thing. This thing is too big for him. It's too big. I can't see how it can possibly happen. We limit God because we ourselves are limited to our own understanding, and we think God must fit in that same box, right? That's not how God operates. That's not how God works. It's not how he worked thousands of years ago with Abram and Sarai, and it's not how he works today. But these are two relatable things that I think we all can relate to, and these are all shortfalls that we all fall into, that Sarah fell into here in these first couple of verses. So be patient, don't put God in a box. Verses 3 and 4, this is where it's going to get a little uncomfortable. So after Abram lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went to Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. Again, a lot of messiness here. And it's hard to completely understand what this must have been like, right? I don't think any of you have been in a situation where we're cohabitating with a slave who is now pregnant with your husband or significant other's child. That's an odd thing. And you're the one that suggested it, right? Like, it's not even something that happened to you. This is your idea in the first place. One of my favorite movies is a movie called Baby Mama. It's a movie, my wife and I watched it while she was laboring with our first child, Lily, and it's the closest thing I can possibly think of like to the situation. So if you're not familiar with the film, it's an Amy Poehler and a Tina Fey movie. Tina Fey's character, Kate, is a successful businesswoman. She has gotten promoted time and time again. She's high up in the ladder in this business, but she has, for medical reasons and for relational reasons, not been able to have a family, which she really badly wants, all right? Now, Amy Poehler's character, Angie, she's a working-class woman who hears about this opportunity on the radio, I believe, to become a surrogate mother and how she can make so much money being a surrogate mother. And so she isn't completely honest in her application and ends up being a surrogate person that could be matched with at this high-end surrogacy agency. Tina Fey's character, Kate, through some consultation with her doctors and friends and some failed relationships, decides, you know what, the best path forward for me to have a family is through surrogacy. So obviously the two match at the surrogacy agency. Everything seems fine in the beginning. The procedure seemingly goes well. But Angie finds herself broken up with her boyfriend and homeless, nowhere to live. So Kate says, well, why don't you come live with me? These two people have very different backgrounds. Kate, like I said, businesswoman, lives in a nice apartment in New York, has a reclaimed Barnwood coffee table that she loves. I don't know that Angie would even know what reclaimed Barnwood is, but she thinks it's a good idea to take her gum and stick it under this table, which drives Kate crazy, right? So these two just have a different idea of how life should be lived. They don't match. Kate goes to the extreme of, well, I'm better than you are, so you should live like me. So she tries to put Angie and force her to kind of do things the way that she does them. Angie inevitably wants to fight back to that a little bit, right? There's this desire to have control of yourself, to have autonomy, which she doesn't have anymore. So there's some tension there. But the real tension comes at the baby shower, okay? So we get all the way to the end of the baby shower. Again, we think that Angie is pregnant with Kate's baby, and at the baby shower, we find out that Angie actually wasn't pregnant with Kate's baby. The procedure didn't take. But then she got pregnant on her own with her boyfriend, and so she actually is pregnant, but not with Kate's child. All this happens in front of Kate's family and friends. It's embarrassing. It's disappointing. There's this awkward moment of, I don't know what we're going to do right now. Both of them leave the room. Both of them leave, and Angie's ex-boyfriend happened to be there at the party. I don't know why. He's played by Dax Shepard. That helped you visualize this moment for me. One of my favorite lines in the movie, Dax Shepard, at this point, the two leave the space. Everyone's in silence and doesn't know what to do. And he says, well, on the bright side, I might be a dad. And I don't think this is exactly how this played out with Hagar and Sarai and Abram. But I think a lot of the same tension existed, right? A lot of the same tension that existed between Hagar and Sarai and Abram existed here. And I hope that at one point in an ignorant moment, Abram turned to Sarah and said, on the bright side, I'm going to be a dad, right? You just like to think that might be the case. But in verses 5 and 6 here, we get a little bit of a better picture as to what this tension looked like and what happened because of it. So here in verse 5, and Sarai said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me. But Abram said to Sarai, behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please. Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. So more and more messiness. And I think it's important to remind ourselves of this moment that all of this is because Sarai wasn't patient. All of this is happening because Sarai, she put God in a box and didn't think it was possible for God's original plan to come to fruition, right? And to be fair, Abram went along with this every step of the way, right? He is not blameless in this one bit. And in fact, when Sarai asks what to do, he says, you should deal with her as you please. So messiness after messiness, all because of these initial mistakes that Sarai made, right? So now we're going to shift to the second part of the story that focuses more on Hagar, okay? So in verses 7 and 8, the angel of the Lord said, found her, Hagar, by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur, which, side note, like, I just love the way that Moses is giving us directions in the Bible. It's kind of the same way that, like, your dad or grandpa would give you directions, you know? Like, you know, it's like by the old gas station that used to be Billy's, but now, anyways, that's just a side note. I just like the directional sense here in the Bible, as if it helps me today. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? She said, I'm fleeing from my mistress, Sarai. This feels like the same type of question that, like, your parents would ask you, right? Like the one they already knew the answer to, but they're going to ask you anyways to see if you'll tell them. She said, where have you come from and where are you going? And she answers, she says, I'm fleeing from my mistress, Sarai. And the angel responded in verse 9. The angel said, the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. The angel of the Lord also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so they cannot be numbered for multitude. It seems like an easier ask than I think it is to go back and submit, right? Because think this entire time, I imagine this whole issue that was happening in the household, the focus was on Sarai and Abram, right? The difficult spot that they were in, that, again, they had put themselves in. And if you put yourself in Hagar's shoes for a second, I think you have to be thinking, why would I need to go back and deal with the people who've hurt me, who have been harsh to me when they made bad choices after bad choices? I'm just the slave girl. I did what I was told to do this entire time, and now they're treating me poorly. I flee, and now you're telling me to go back and submit to them? It seems a little difficult. But similarly, I think there's some similarities here between the ask that God is making here of Sarai and the ask that God makes of Abram back in chapter 12. It comes along with a blessing, right? There's this hard thing, but there's this thing to hold on to, right? And the thing to hold on to is the offspring that cannot be numbered for multitude, right? Again, this child, this idea of a child that you're going to have. I'll take care of you. I've got you. Have faith. Now in verse 11, the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. Now for any parents in the room, if you had the opportunity for God to give you a glimpse into what your child is going to be like when they get older, I think you might be a little disappointed if this is what God said, right? He's going to be a wild donkey of a man. He's going to be against everyone. Everyone's going to be against him, right? That's not exactly what you'd probably be hoping for. But if we key in on that part there in verse 11, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael because the Lord has listened to your affliction. If we key in on that, I think it's very possible that for potentially the first time in Hagar's life, she felt understood. She felt heard. She felt seen. And I think I know this to some extent because of what happens next in verse 13 and 14, right? In verse 13, she says, so she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, you are a God of seeing. For she said, truly here I have seen him who looks after me. Therefore the well was called Beer Laharoi. It's between Kadesh and Bered. That phrase, you are a God of seeing, in Hebrew is the phrase El Roy, and which also can be translated to the God who sees me. One of my favorite books that I've ever read that has anything to do with youth ministry is this book, Seen. And it's this idea, it's about middle schoolers and high schoolers, and even young adults too. And it has to do with mental health as it relates to those age groups. And it's written to parents, written to youth workers, written to anyone who works with kids in those age groups. And the idea of the book is that at the core, every middle schooler and high schooler or young adult wants to feel seen, right? Wants to feel understood. Wants to feel like somebody out there knows who they are, knows why they might do some of the things that they do, even if they understand it wasn't a great decision in the moment. They just want to feel seen, right? Understood. And at the core, I think every one of us has that same core desire to feel seen, to be understood, to be heard. And that's what Hagar's experiencing probably for the first time. She was a slave girl. Why would anyone have taken the time to understand her, to see her? But God did. And there's this amazing picture here of, for the first time in her life, the one person that probably matters more than anybody else. If you could pick one person to see you, it'd be God, right? Even if Hagar felt like Sarai didn't understand her or see her, Abram didn't understand her or see her, her friends, I mean, imagine what that did to the other slaves that they may have owned too, right? Like she was ostracized a little bit from them as well because she was different. She was set apart from them. But she felt seen by God. And it's an easy thing for us to miss ourselves today. We want to be seen. We want to be seen when we're kids. We want to be seen by our parents. We want to feel like we're making our parents proud. We want to feel understood as we're growing up and getting these new ideas and getting these new interests. We want our parents to know us and who we are. When we become teenagers and high schoolers and young adults, we want that cute guy or cute girl that we like to see us, right? We want to feel understood and known and loved by them. When we become parents, we want our kids to understand us. We want our kids to understand why we do the things that we do, even if sometimes it's hard, right? When we're employees, we want our employer to see us, to see the hard work that we put in, to see the talents that we have and the value that we bring to their organization and to this team that we might be on. As a business owner, you want the community around you and the customers that you have to see the value in your product that you bring to their day-to-day lives or to the community as a whole. Everyone wants to be seen, and we don't always get that from the people in our lives that we want to be seen by. But the beautiful thing is, and if there's one thing that we take away from today, I hope it's this, God sees you. God is the God who sees me. God is the God who sees you. Even when you feel like no one else sees you, God does. He's Elroy. Hagar is the only person in the entire Bible that names God right here in this moment. God names himself. God reveals himself in other places, but nowhere else in the Bible does somebody name God except for this moment in time, and it's because she was in this place where for the first time in her entire life, she felt seen, and she realized God is the God who sees me. Elroy, God is the God who sees me. And then 15 and 16, and Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of the son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. And again, I think we have to go back to the beginning of the chapter here. Sarah made some choices, a selfish chain of events, bad news after bad news, right? We see, but throughout all the bad choices, we see this theme of redemption play through, right? We see it when Hagar goes back to Abram and Sarah. We see it with the interaction with Hagar and the angel. We see it here at the end with Abram and his son Ishmael. And we'll see it again later on, spoiler alert, when God's original plan for how Abram and Sarah would have a baby actually happens, right? We see redemption time and time again in this story. That's because Hagar felt seen. God saw her, and through that, he showed his redemption. It's a story that we see throughout the entire Bible. It's a story we see in our lives today, a story of redemption. I've said this before. This is from that same professor who told me about the Bible being rated R. The Bible is a story of God bringing his people back to him. The Bible's a redemption story. We're part of that today. God still redeems because we still fall short. You would think by now we may have figured this out, right? From Adam and Eve to now, we continuously make the same mistakes over and over again for thousands and thousands of years. We've fallen short of the glory of God, but we're still in need of his redemption, and God still offers it freely, freely. The Bible is a story of God bringing his people back to him. Let's pray. God, thank you. Thank you for seeing me the same way that you saw Hagar. Thank you for being a God who understands me better than I understand myself, better than anyone could ever understand me. Thank you for loving me through the flaws and the mistakes that I made. Thank you for loving us and offering redemption freely as a gift. God, I pray as we go through this week that we continuously look towards you to be known and be seen by, even when people around us don't seem to see who we are. We don't feel like we're understood in places where we might want to be. God, I pray that we can find comfort and hope in being seen by you. Turn and pray. Amen. As we get into communion today, I want to look back there at verse 13. My favorite verse from this entire passage, and I think for some obvious reasons. But let's read that verse one more time here. So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." We talked about God's name there, that Hagar calls him Elroy, right? We didn't spend much time, if any at all, on that second line of the verse. "Truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." So here we have a slave girl, Hagar, who for the first time is feeling understood and is equating that this being looked after, taken care of, together. And isn't this a wonderful picture of the gospel? To be looked after, to be taken care of by God. It's what God did for us when he sent Jesus to die on the cross. He saw that there was a need in our life. He saw that we weren't able to do what we had to do to be able to have this relationship with him. And he said, "You know what? I'm going to make you feel seen now by sending Jesus." This redemption story we're talking about, right? This is what it's all about. And through the sacrifice that he made by sending his son to live his perfect life and die for our sins on the cross and to be in a relationship with us, we're able to experience this redemption the same way that Hagar experienced redemption thousands of years ago. And that's why we take time every week to celebrate communion. That's why we take time to celebrate what God did for us through his son on the cross. That's why we take time to remember the bread that was broken for us that represents his body, and the juice that represents the blood of Christ poured out for us. So this morning, when we come up and take communion here just a little bit, you guys stationed up here in the front, I'll pray. Come up when you're ready. Take time. But I want you to reflect on something this morning with us. I want you to reflect on this. What does it mean in your life for God to be Elroy, the God who sees you? What does that mean? Let's pray. Hey God, just thank you again for loving us the way that you do. For loving us despite our flaws, despite our mistakes. God, I pray that this morning as we take some time to reflect with you, that you show us how we have been seen by you in the past, even when we may not have realized it. I pray that we feel seen in this moment by you. Turn and pray.